You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Take your time. I hit record, but we're doing a it's just like a long
live run. Yeah. This is what it's always like, folks.
What if we hurt? What if in this moment we caught Tom getting a fight with his neighbor and kill him?
Maybe.
And we had to delete all this.
And then Ben Affleck directs it like 5 years from now. Yeah. But it's based in Dorchester.
Oh, of course. How could it not be? Yeah.
It can't be based in Woodside, Queens. It'd have to be Dorchester.
Dorchester. I like
as long as I'm played by that guy Slane, the guy that's the rapper that's in Gone Baby Gone and The Town.
No. I've got a different guy for you. What if we go a completely different direction and you're the skinny old guy in The Town? The creepy skinny old guy who's like,
I gotta be Pete Postlewaite.
Yes. Yes,
you're dude, that guy's face hurts.
Yeah, but he's in an the amazing best way, actor, Tom.
But his face hurts the face.
In the best way. Is,
you're out there looking for your mama. Dude, I just watched that scene the other day when he goes, if there's a hell son, or there's a heaven son, I guarantee you she's not in it.
Yo, he's monstrous in that movie. All right, hold on. I'm hitting record. All right.
So we did. Welcome. We're not keeping that?
We're keeping it all.
Broke. It's all.
We're keeping it all. Go. You did your best.
If there's
your
a heaven, son, she's definitely not in it.
Why would really, he say
you
that?
Did,
it's
you
so mean.
It really well.
Because he got her hooked on drugs because his father wouldn't do the work for him.
I get it, but why be so mean about somebody's mom years after she's dead?
Because Ben Affleck was trying to quit.
I know, my point, Tom.
Mean people are mean.
Yeah, I guess.
I wouldn't have had that off the tip of my tongue to be able to be like, if there's a heaven, son, she's certainly not in it.
One, Patrick, go.
Welcome to Axe to Grind, the hardcore podcast. I'm Patrick.
I'm Bob.
And I'm Pete Postlewaite.
I love him in that movie. He's the weird little creep. His body is like smaller than mine and he's menacing.
And his face is just
not great.
So much drinking, and he's got like gin blossoms on his face.
Are there any weirdo little creeps in movies that you don't fuck with, Pat?
No, I like them all. The smaller and weirder
like
you
sucker.
Are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a sucker for that.
We go Mr. Bean.
Oh, I fuck with Mr. Bean heavy.
All right. We're going to shout out all our sponsors really quick. To Live a Lie, tolivealie.com/store. Go there.
Drop that bomb. Boom.
Boom, boom, boom. Get some stuff. They have some Black Friday stuff. I'm telling you, go get the Hatred Surge Grinding Reanimated Violence cassette and get the Despise You West Side Horizon cassette. Very cool.
Well, those are fucking heavyweights right there.
Yes, sir. Death Wish Inc.
Oh, let me yeah. Oh, you're going to do a clap? Do a clap. I kind of like that. What is that? That's like shaving a haircut.
Yeah. All right,
DeathWishInc.com. Yes.
They got a Black Friday sale. Go get some stuff. They're doing a bunch of stuff. They got a bunch of that Converge stuff out there.
They got that HopeCon reissue?
Yep, HopeCon reissue on pre-order. Go get that. Get that quick. It's all good. Closed Casket Activities. CloseCasketActivities.com. Black Friday sale. Now, you're hearing this theoretically the day after it ends. It's 25% off all items. As soon as we finish recording, I'm going to petition to our man and say, yo, don't advertise it. Don't say shit about it.
Maybe
for the Axe to Grind audience, extend that sale till, let's say, 5 p.m. Tuesday, the 30th. I'm going to see if he'll do it. I'm not, no promises, but maybe we'll do that as a low key thing for you guys. If you're there, you got to get some of these classic stuff, the Harnessway reissue. As important, maybe more importantly to us, those new releases, the Age of Apocalypse record. I actually have been digging that I Flies record. So go check that stuff out, closecasketactivities.com. And guys, finally, last but certainly not least, Run for Cover Records. Run for cover records.com. Their Black Friday sale is running through today. When you hear this, you can go get a bunch of new merch, 25% off everything except the pre-order items and those new Black Friday exclusive designs, which includes new merch from Portrayal of Guilt, Wiccafe Springs Eternal, Field Medic, Basement, Fiddlehead, Sun June. Wow. One Step Closer and Self-Defense Family.
Well said. Okay.
What's the design? Endless War with Lames.
We're calling it the Mind Goblin Collection.
This is the first of the Mind Goblin Collection on a ringer tee. Patrick, when's the last time you wore a ringer tee? 2012?
No, I think somebody gave me one that is like a classic hardcore thing that I have. Oh,
like
have.
That Tiger's Jaw ringer you got. That's right.
That's the classic hardcore design. That's the one.
Just think of the clothes you usually wear. Tiger's Jaw, maybe Field Medic long sleeve, you know, that kind of stuff.
All the hits.
Runforcoverrecords.com. Go get it. Shout out to our sponsors. We love you. Guys, what's happening? How you feeling?
I feel pretty good, honestly. I'm well fed.
Sounds good. He sounds like he's got a second wind.
Yeah, well, that's because we had a day off of tour. The second half of this tour is going to be fucking brutal. There's like no days off. I realize as I get older, a day off is of great value to me. And it used to be that I had that mentality, you know, like that this band could be your life sort of shit, where it's like if you're not playing, you're paying. It's like no. Either way, you're paying. But one way, you're paying with your physical health.
And you can get money back. You can't get your knees back.
That's correct.
True story.
So like a day off is a glorious thing.
Well, yo, here's a question for you, because this is something.
Please.
At any other time during your musical career, touring career, have you had as much stuff going on outside the band as you do right now?
No, I'm fucking slammed.
So that day off is not just the day off from the tour, but a day to catch up, a day to get in, and also the rest, of course.
Yeah, I know that the running gag is I do no work, which is partially true, by the way, but I do know work across 2.5 careers. And then I got music on top of that. So it's like,
you know, how much energy you have to expound to use up to not do a ton of work across 2.5 jobs.
You know what it is to convince your boss that you doing nothing is what he asked for. It's not easy, man. I got to do it multiple times a week.
Reveal that you use a pseudonym. This is your fake name because you don't want your employers to be able to listen to a podcast where you tell them, hey, I'm not doing anything. So this is where we reveal your real names, like James Allen. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
hey, Bob, you think we're going to get a Pat Kinlan DNP coach's decision one of these nights?
Yeah, I think so.
Like Pat just like doesn't show, and it's like a three-piece or a four-piece, and like someone else is singing. He's like LeBron on the bench just resting up for playoff time. Like the tertiary market doesn't get Pat.
Oh, okay. I think that might start. You know what? I mean, as we continue, as the touring season expands, I think it's just going to make sense. Some nights, you know, if you're in Albuquerque, you might get roadie singer. You know, that's just
here's a question for you fellas. And let's, for the benefit of I'm curious, and I guess this is stuff I could ask you off the air, but for the benefit of our listeners who have zero interest in sports, I guess keep it punchy. The gentleman, Isaiah is his name. Is
Isaiah
that correct?
Stewart.
Isaiah Stewart, who took a run at LeBron.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Give me your PTI take on this. Is it, was he in any way justified? Yes, no.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ooh.
LeBron clipped him hard.
Dude, he's bleeding.
Got to know. Yeah.
You made me bleed my own blood.
He clipped him hard.
So you guys do not subscribe to the idea that there's different rules for. There's different rules for different people, and that that pushing another man is fine. Pushing LeBron is not fine.
No,
here's the deal. Look at the tape. Dude did not immediately run on LeBron. He took some words, took some time, and obviously there's a moment where I think he didn't realize how bad it was. Then the blood starts pouring over your face. And I think LeBron could have done more if he didn't want that. He didn't want that smoke. He should have gone harder to the mat to say, yo, I'm sorry. That was on me. And it seems like he tried to still stand his ground. Yo, LeBron, 6'9", 280.
Yeah, I was going to say.
6'9", 280-ish.
That would have been. Yeah.
Like, yo, the only difference, Isaiah Stewart, trained boxer.
Is that true?
Yes.
LeBron, he would have fucked up LeBron.
Born in Rochester, grew up playing soccer and boxing.
Damn. No shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you don't know what went on before that, too, though.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's
that was later in the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, because I was seeing the take. Who said it? Gilbert? Somebody said it that was like, yo, there's just two rules here. You don't punch LeBron and you don't punch Steph Curry. That's welcome to the NBA.
Yo,
and I thought that was an interesting take, because then everybody in the comments, and no disrespect to you fellas, but everybody in the comments section who is not a professional NBA player was like, fuck that. It doesn't matter. Whoever disrespects you needs it. And it's like, I don't know. Like, is it worth your career? Because if that's what you're gambling with, I'd just as soon – LeBron can elbow me in my neck for the right amount of money. You know what I'm saying? So,
oh, sure.
So I thought it was interesting to watch, because I was on the road completely detached, and then I'm just getting things in people's Instagram stories.
So wait, Tom, I've got a question for you real quick. Let's set the stage for Patrick. How many times did LeBron punch Isaiah Stewart in the face? Or get him in the face? Once?
We know of once. It probably could have been 10 times.
Yeah. How many times did Isaiah Stewart punch with LeBron in the face?
Zero.
Right.
Because he would have gotten calls.
Patrick, there's a whole lot of, the NBA player Anthony Edwards came out and said, when dudes get up in your face in the NBA, he's like, that shit's fake.
Yeah, sure.
There's a whole lot of what they call hold me back.
Yeah.
Parallel to hardcore. You see,
I like a good hold me back
energy, you know?
Yeah, I like a good hold me back.
Now, Isaiah really put on quite a show.
Which I thought was a little too much.
Way too much. When he actually sprints towards him, it felt like over an oversell. You better be ready to fucking punch.
With our homies at Secret Jocks, I said Cade Cunningham was the MVP who kept getting in front of Isaiah to try to curtail it. It didn't get worse.
Yeah.
But the tail of the tape, LeBron got one in. Isaiah Stewart didn't get any. So I don't know why everybody's saying, you can't punch LeBron. Yeah, he didn't.
Mm.
No. Well, I mean, the same thing. I mean, different. It was a star going after a lesser star. But, like, the Morris brothers always want that smoke.
Oh, yeah.
And Jokic.
Yep.
Pat, did you see that?
I did not.
You know who Nikola Jokic is?
I do.
Big, big fucking Slavic dude.
Yep.
Big fucking guy.
Talented, yeah.
I mean, a great ball player, but like something happened, and one of the was it Marquise Morris, I think, like hit him.
Marquise, yeah,
and like walked away from. Oh no, he like followed him really hard, like intentionally, and like he turned his back to him, and walked away. Jokic came over and fucking forearm shivered him right in his back, knocked him right on his ass.
Yeah,
and now like Marquise's brother was like you know, oh, when we play you, I'm gonna get you, but like Jokic has these two like brothers that kind of look like they might be mobsters.
and professional, at least one of them has professionally fought, and they look like the henchmen from any bad Russian gang movie.
Yeah,
exactly. Slavics. Yeah. So you're telling me that the
NBA is interesting.
Sometimes, and then you just watch Curry put on shows, and it's fun.
Yeah,
yeah. Don't. The moral of the story: don't punch Steph Curry.
Yeah.
So, guys, you want to talk a little hardcore?
I do, although on reflection, Steph Curry might be the only NBA player I stand a chance against, so it's too bad I can't punch him, but go on.
He's probably bigger than you'd think.
No doubt.
He's probably like Bob size, but we think like he's like, he must be like 5'6".
And diamond cut. And like,
yeah, oh, listen, you know, when I said chance, I meant like I hit him with a hammer and I run.
That's true. We dropped our 80s Mosh Madness convo last week. We're going to post up a list. Pretty cool feedback. Lots of opinions. We appreciate it.
Okay, wait. Bob, let me drill.
Drill.
I know too many 90s dudes because it was people that – my shit was people that were confused, didn't want to talk about the obscures. Did you get a different energy? Did you get people that were all in, excited to talk about the obscures?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh,
okay, that's great.
And a mix.
I'm glad we're servicing all sorts of people.
We got some feedback from people who were like, oh, why'd you pick this? Why didn't you get this? A lot of conversation I think that was interesting is the how is this punk but not hardcore? And I said, yo, look, There's no real rule to it. Just like
no, we had to make decisions. That's all it is. We had to
make decisions. And it's sort of like I said to one fellow, I was like, look, one of my big goals was I didn't want to put my personal taste in too hard. I wanted to make sure that all three hosts of the show were represented as much as we could. And I feel pretty good about that. And three, like that if it was something like when it comes to the hardcore or punk thing, look, it's all gravy to me. Like I like almost all the bands that we talked about and left on the periphery. You know, we had conversations weeks ago with Eric Wilson as part of it, talking about some of the SST stuff. I think we are, you know, at least a couple of us, we're into the Minutemen. We like a lot of that stuff. It's just, would the Minutemen ever refer to themselves as a hardcore band?
No.
I don't think so.
Answer's no.
Right. Like, and the same is true for Fear. And maybe same is true for some stuff that made our list. But that's okay. Because we just had to pick some corners. Feel pretty good about what we've got highlighting. Any other feedback? Tom, you get any feedback on our lists?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people were stoked to like either dive into stuff that they had were blind spots to them. Some people, like our buddy Julian, still mm-hmm. was a little mad about the Carnivore being included because he didn't think Carnivore was a hardcore band.
Yeah, we should talk about that actually.
I mean, I don't necessarily disagree. I don't even like the band, but I felt like if we're being fair.
So that is the one band who's come up in conversation that I wanted to put on the table.
All right.
SOD was the other, but I was like, you know, I see those. I see the SOD thing, and there was a time where it was more important. And we're going to be able to have an interesting conversation about SOD kind of in the same way as we would about Carnivore. Carnivore Retaliation has a song, Race War. Lyrics of Race War are not super great. However, I want to ask you guys, are they meant to be taken literally? Or no. Is it sort of a weird kind of third-party reading? So here, let me read them so that people can understand what we're talking about. Carnivore Race War. Black against white, yellow versus red. The fighting won't stop until we're all dead. Burning riots destroy the masses. Nightfall brings death, city reduced to ashes. Don't call me your brother. We fell from different cunts. Okay. And your akins, your skin's an ugly color.
Mm.
Race war, we're going to a race war. Hate war, we're going to a hate war. Pendicial homicide, bloodshed, rampage, torture, blah, blah, blah. I can keep going. But there's parts here where it starts to be more explaining, you know, Muslims against Christians, the Arabs versus Jews, the Catholics and Protestants, no one wins, we all lose. Everybody's going to die. Xenophobic tendencies instilled in us at birth.
Yeah. Who thinks that this is anything but a critique of race politics? Very clearly it is.
Well, you know, it's the same. It's tough. You know what I mean?
You don't yell everybody's gonna die as a positive.
No. And xenophobic tendencies instilled in us at birth. I mean, if these were crass lyrics, maybe it would feel different, right?
Okay, let's talk about that. The only reason that I think that because I'm looking at these lyrics right now, and they're to me manifestly satire, or if not satire, critique, not even satire, critique. Mm-hmm. But the only reason that you might not think that is because these are morons. These are knuckleheads. Mm-hmm. And it's because it's not crass, because it's not some high-minded effort at like, you know, like, hey, here's something for everybody. And it's just kind of like, no disrespect to Carnivore really, but just like kind of like mm-hmm. Goombas in our eyes. Like we have a tendency to be like, oh, they can't have of course they're literal, but it's not literal. I'm looking right at it.
Now, what about the Carnivore logo patch I just sent you?
Would wear.
What about
and you would probably get beat up because that's definitely like an offshoot of a swastika.
It's not a great look, I'll be honest.
Pretty sure. No, I mean, I think they were logo.
They were Steve Albini's of like Quentin Road, like Flapjack.
That's exactly right. Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, I think they were a little bit. I wouldn't. All right. Here's the thing.
Yes.
And like I said before, I thought they belonged just because if we're talking about like the 64 most important band, like,
well, yeah, most, yeah, yeah. Like, and influential, right? You know?
Yeah. I mean, whether we like it or not, if you like fucking Sheer Terror or if you like fucking Blood for Blood, a lot of it came from like Carnivore.
Tom, I'll take it one step further. If you like early metalcore, like this, you got a lot of it right here. Like,
of course. If you like Twitching Tongues, if you like Life of Agony, yeah. If you like it's all from, but you know, you got to take, you know, it's a little tongue in cheek, but it's like one of those things. That's like, all right, I'm going to age myself. And
no, please.
Like Archie Bunker. Like, he was racist. But, like, some of the stuff he said he didn't totally mean, but he was still kind of fucking racist. Like, we're talking about a dude that wrote, like, the questionable stuff on another record that might actually be on our list.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein, Plus, or... are they going to say it? Yes, vegan and veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. You can get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring, maybe gardening. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. That is the type of meal I prefer. They're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Now, I'd like you to head to factormeals.com/axetogrind50. That's numeral 50. And use code AXETOGRIND50, that's numeral 50, to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's insane. That's code AXETOGRIND50 at factormeals.com/AXETOGRIND50. That's to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Crazy.
Yeah, I mean, look.
Oh, yeah. No, that's true.
I'm not diving into
it. So it's not like it's part of his character. It's not just like him being like, I wrote this fucked up shitty song, this one song. It's like kind of a repeating theme throughout his work.
Okay. Right. I'm gonna jump out and cape for this and say, yes, let's say different time in the respect that Provocation was much more part of the flavor of the day. Right now, you can't be a provocateur of any meaningful type. But without looking into a guy's heart, I'm just reading these lyrics, and I truly cannot see any world where somebody could read them purely literally. Now, if you want to get into it and be like, oh, but I heard he said this, or I heard he said that in an interview, or I heard he did this, or whatever, that's fine. But like on the merit of these lyrics alone, I see nothing that would make me think that he's being literal. In fact, the parts that read like, oh, that's sketchy, they're almost in every instance, they're accompanied by something that puts it firmly tongue in cheek. You know what I mean? So I don't know the guy's heart, and I don't know where his head was at this exact moment. But looking at these lyrics, I don't feel any sort of way about him.
So that brings up the question. Are we comfortable putting Shine on the record?
Oh, yeah.
Tom?
I'm cool dropping it.
So it's up to me. You know, the big problem for me, because I don't disagree. Well, there's major parts to me. I do think this was influential.
And that's kind of where it belonged.
Right. It's influential. There's conversation to be had about it. And I actually think maybe we do a conversation on a separate episode about Carnivore typo negative, Pete Steele in general. We can tie in the Cause for Alarm stuff, all that stuff, his involvement in New York hardcore. Because I think it's actually interesting, because I don't think it's not square. It's not like easy peg stuff, in my opinion.
Well, Just to your point about it being influential and that mattering for the purposes of this conversation, above all, in my view, is I'm like, why don't we talk about YDL more? And you guys are like, because they're bad also.
Yeah, you know that's the big problem. And, like, I can talk to you about the YDL demo, which I think is pretty good, but like, then you get anywhere past that and it's like, yo, this is just kind of bad.
But that's
like,
the thing, right? Bad. Is like, we're not talking about YDL for the sake of talking about YDL. We're talking about something that actually had legs and it has influence moving forward.
Like an early crossover hardcore band.
Yeah, that's the conversation. You know what I mean?
And so to me, there are records that I would rather include than this one. For example, I straight up forgot the record Ill Repute, What Happens Next, which I think I had labeled Aggression as one of the most important. We talked about the Stalag 13.
Ill Repute might be more, right?
Ill Repute, What Happens Next is probably more important in terms of like the
Nardcore. But more important thing. Than Carnivore, though?
To like hardcore, scale, no not. Chance. To today's hardcore, no chance. To the fact that the metal influence came in and metallic hardcore crossover into metalcore, no chance. It's not even close, unfortunately to me, but it's just...
And
that's not to dismiss those sounds, but it's just no chance.
Bob, though, before you go in, it's... You say that, and I agree with you. Hardcore at large owes more to Carnivore at this exact moment.
They changed AF.
But to our listeners...
I think our listeners fall pretty squarely in the middle of... We have older listeners. We have people who are like, yeah, Ill Repute, that matters. And we have a lot of people who are hearing this right now going, I've never heard Ill Repute.
No, but...
And they may not have heard Carnivore either, but they've never heard Ill Repute. And some of the bands we're talking about as being influenced by Carnivore, they have heard.
Hold on. Can we make this a bit like a tiny bit of a quick hit right here?
Of course.
Do you think... Let's say that Carnivore... it has had a greater influence on our listeners who like things a little bit more metal tinged. That's a lot of our listeners for sure. But we also have listeners for whom Ill Repute would be like the middle point between To Live a Lie material and Triple B material. And that shit is wildly popular among our listeners. Do you know what I'm saying?
This is a 1984 LP from California. And when I look at it, I'm like, man, this record has some hits. It's a really good record. And we don't put enough shine. I think we all three would say, yo, this podcast has a bit of a New York bias, but for good reason.
No shit.
And but for good reason. Like, yo, there's no like, yo, oh, we talk too much about it. You know, we talk about it because it's a lot of what we know, and it's also kind of the biggest thing. Yeah, you know? And I look at our list and I go, you know what? We have AF Cause for Alarm. We have Leeway. We have Judge. We have SOD. Does Carnivore bring something different? We have the Crumbsuckers. Does Carnivore bring a different angle of representation to what those do? I'll be really honest. I'll answer the question myself. I think it does, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think it does. I think there's some New York thing we could kick off there if we want Ill Repute in, which to be frank, now that you mention it, I think kind of needs to be in there. But
yeah, I think it does. I mean, so here's my candidates for pushing out. I would push out SOD Speak English or Die. I would push out Youth Brigade Sound and Fury, but I kind of like including it. I think I'm hard pressed to push anything else out or Carnivore. I could also be pushed to push out Battalion of Saints, Second Coming, or No For an Answer, A Thought Crusade. But again, I kind of like those being represented in here.
But I mean, in terms of importance.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean.
Like, but no one's like, yo, I started this new hardcore band. It's kind of influenced by Battalion of Saints.
Not a living person.
You know, like, I know disrespect to them.
No. There might have been a moment about 14 years ago in the middle of that No Way records wave. But that's literally there's 10 people going, yeah, that's right.
Right.
And everybody else is like, what? No Way records?
Right. But you're talking about like Twitching Tongues wrote a sequel to a Carnivore song.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Like in the last 5, 10 years.
Yep.
Yeah.
No.
Like, I don't think anyone's being like,
yeah.
All right. That's, I mean, I don't agree with that. I don't like.
No, I agree. I agree.
I don't like Carnivore, really. But I think in terms of if we're being fair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think Carnivore, and I think, I mean, as much as the same thing with SOD, like, those were at times of, like, during the crossover that, like, changed hardcore.
Well, okay.
Like, Tom, Youth Brigade didn't change hardcore.
No, no, I agree with that. But I think Bob had a point where do we get SOD's energy in any of these other picks? Because I don't think we get Carnivore's energy in any of these other picks. That's why I think, like, for the sake of the list, Carnivore's got to stay. I agree that everything's influential. Everything we're talking about right now,
sure,
influential.
Sure.
But I think for the kind of the sturdiness of the list being representative, Carnivore stays in my view. SOD could probably go. What else is in that kind of crossover fun thrash sort of energy that we already represent? Oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Leeway?
But I love Leeway. I think of SOD as being like entirely more intentionally goofy. And
they're very goofy.
And I think
so Leeway is like so SOD is sonically it's not very much like Leeway. It's like halfway to Carnivore, but not all the way to Carnivore. It's got the energy of Murphy's Law and then a little more further. Sonically, I guess the next closest might be AF Cause for Alarm.
Right.
Oh yeah, that's true actually.
But I would think SOD or Carnivore would, because it represents like the crossover and the energy.
Okay. Let's do this.
Yeah. Let's take off SOD, leave Carnivore, but we can talk about SOD and talk about that kind of world of stuff. Cause it isn't the same, but there's a world where this kind of stuff, like in the time before now, in the pre-2000 era, it wasn't that everyone who loved Carnivore loved SOD, etc. But for me, like as a young punk kid, I had a friend or two who are more onto the metal side of things who really repped for a lot of New York hardcore, a lot of stuff I liked, but also was like, yo, but SOD, man, oh. And there was a couple others, really liked MOD, really liked Carnivore, really, you know what I mean? The guy who's like, yeah, I mean, I love all this stuff, but Slayer is still my favorite band. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, I mean the kid who sees himself as a hardcore kid, perhaps, but to our ear is much more into the adjacent realm. That the adjacent changes every 10 years.
Yeah.
So like, there's a period where adjacent means everything metal influenced, and now adjacent means probably everything kind of like post Title Fight influence. But like the adjacent changes, but it's still that concept.
Yo, that's actually an interesting conversation for all of us at some point, is what was the adjacent in the 90s? You know what I mean? Because I think there was a lot of it.
Oh,
we had the 90s emo, like the other side Texas of Jade Tree.
Yeah.
And like the other side of Jade Tree. And then there's some labels that were specific into it where it was like, yo, this was really popular. And yes, hardcore kids liked it, but it had its own world of people who wouldn't totally fuck with hardcore. You know what I mean?
Doghouse.
In the 80s, and even in the different part of the 90s, you might have had stuff like SOD and Carnivore.
Well, that's what I mean, is that it's like to me, Carnivore is purely adjacent, but we know many, many, many hardcore kids who it's on their, not maybe not their Mount Rushmore, but it's like a significant thing. So like, I don't know. I find these bands kind of interesting because to my version of hardcore, this is not dyed in the wool at all. And these are like slightly adjacent, but the linkage, it's like Texas is the reason. Like Texas is the reason to me is like, well, it's poo poo, but it's also like,
hey,
It's also very, no disrespect to the Texas is the reason musicians who listen to this podcast. Sorry, I called your life's work poo poo, but I guess what I'm saying is it does have its own world.
100% has its own,
but it's always in the mix. Yeah. You know what I mean? Or was always in the mix.
It was, if you like this stuff, it's a step over. Okay, so we're keeping Carnivore. We're going to say goodbye to SOD, but we are going to do some content about it for somebody who was excited about that. And we're going to add Ill Repute, What Happens Next in.
Okay, I'm good with that.
Tom, are you good with that?
Sure, I'll go along with you guys. I would have kept SOD over Carnivore, but I get it.
Really? Okay. I mean,
like, I don't like Carnivore, too. Like, actively. But like, I don't.
Right, but
I actually kind of enjoy that
you,
one.
Do SOD you have record. Strong feelings on SOD though?
He like, said he just kind of likes it. Yeah, yo,
I dig it. But I think Carnivore is more hardcore than SOD is okay. Anthrax with the hardcore guy.
Yes, see, that's how I feel. Okay, go. That's. Perfect.
I mean, literally.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
Yeah.
It's Carnivore with a vote of no confidence from Tom. All right, is that cool?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and let me second the no vote or no confidence, but with both Tom and I acknowledging that we think that record does have this weird relevance to hardcore now, and we're going to pick it apart when we do it. So,
all right.
And I mean, sonically, I'm willing to bet there's going to be a lot positive to take out of it, but we can't ignore. And that's going to be part of this. Hopefully, everybody who's listening, we're not going to look at this stuff and excuse it per se. We're going to talk about it and try to be really honest because lots of these records have weird chrono twerks on them where it's like, ooh, you wouldn't do that now, you know?
Right. But that's on some level that's to be expected. And what we should not do, and I suspect I know we won't do is the part that's difficult for us because maybe, we don't know everything, obviously, and we never claim to, but sometimes we know a little bit more than we talk about on the air. And there's some things are like, we have, Tom, as a lawyer, what would you call that? Where we have supporting evidence. to some of the shit being maybe a little sketchier than even the music lets on.
It hasn't met Discovery yet, so we're good.
Yeah, it hasn't met Discovery. Thank you,
Tom. Tom really always brings authenticity when you try to go there.
And
he just hits it. All right, I feel good about that. Shout out to the people who caught my mistake when I said when I was talking about JFA and talked about liking their 7-inch. I missaid. Land of No Toilets, which is the Ill Repute 7-inch. I was talking about Blatant Localism, the JFA 7-inch. None of that matters.
How dare you?
I tried to explain to somebody. I was like, you know what the thing is? In 2001, I believe, I bought both those 7-inches, one at Generations and one at FMU, within like weeks of each other, and was always so psyched because these were these two like early 87. So like it was like, that means literally nothing to anybody and doesn't make any sense except in my own brain. So shout out. Glad we got that Ill Repute record. Tom, one thing I wanted to tell you.
Yes.
Because I had a couple people who said the same thing, who said they felt so good about hearing you say this. Because there was a bunch of records on here that people said, I'm just, for whatever reason, I don't know that record. Or I don't know this band. And there's some deep cuts that are like, no clue at all. But they're like, it's so cool to have. And I think this goes for all three of us. There are records on here I have not given true time to.
Oh, yeah.
And there's records on here I haven't given true time to in 10, 15, 20 years. So we're all going in on this ride together and doing some discovery, some different things. So I think it's going to be really fun. And so anybody who listens, young, old, new, old, this is your first episode or your last, don't be intimidated by this project. You know what I mean? Do it with us. Listen to the records. Give them honest time. And I bet you find when you listen to 60 something records, there's a good chance you're either going to rediscover a record you used to love or love some new music, which is kind of part of our gig here.
Although it's also funny if somebody does the entire ride with us and just is watching a completely different movie and because they walk away going, God damn, I hate 80s hardcore, which would
be fine too.
Yeah, it would be. It's also just very funny.
I also want to shout out the people who hit us and said, you're doing my least favorite decade of hardcore.
Yeah.
Whoa. You know, because I know for me, that's like, it's not heresy, but it's close.
No, actually, like, wow. Real quick, let's talk about that as a concept.
Yeah.
Because we are, I don't know who said that, but let's just assume that we're a couple years older, perhaps a decade older. That is fascinating because now you have so many decades to choose from. When I got involved in this,
it was two.
Really, you had one and a half. It's
two shelves to pick from. You really couldn't.
And you could either be, totally into what was happening at right that time with some effort to educate yourself on stuff that happened before it, or you could be the guy that's obsessed with the stuff that happened before. But those were your only real options. Now we've got a great many listeners for whom 2000s hardcore is not just their hardcore. They believe in their hearts that is the best hardcore.
And right. I mean, quite honestly, we would probably think, I mean, me personally, I gravitate to the 90s.
You know, Tom,
at
every other juncture in my life, yes. But I feel like I've heard it all.
I know for the first time in the 90s.
Right. Listen, I know it's not true that I've heard it all, but I feel too familiar.
Like
with
you've
the 90s.
Covered the whole field. Yeah.
I feel like it. And again,
I think
when people bust out their like local opener that I've never heard of, I'm still thrilled to get familiar with it. But like in my head, I'm like, oh shit, like we got to talk about the 90s. Like,
I mean, there's as much garbage as is good.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think even divvying them up in decades is even probably not fair.
Oh, no. Because it's just for the exercise.
If you think of the 80s. 80 to 85 and then 86 to 90 or 89, whatever the hell you want to break down. Completely different.
Tom, it's a theory I've had for a long time, and maybe I've mentioned it here before, but maybe I haven't, is that when we look at, like, sports is a great example. When you look at five-year periods, there is so much more consistency in a five-year range, and that you can actually look at these sample sizes and go, okay, this actually feels like a time period. Tom, like you can get more definitive answers in a five-year period. For example, Tom, who's the best basketball player of the 80s, would you say? The decade of the 80s.
Of the 80s, I would probably go Kareem.
So Kareem
Larry
is the
Bird.
Best.
I wouldn't pick Jordan.
It's not Jordan. Jordan's not.
I'd pick Jordan to be the 90s.
It'd be from 90 to 95, and then there's a real argument that he also has the late 90s too.
Yeah, it might be Magic or Bird.
So Larry Bird is almost definitively the best player from 1980 to 1985, or 80 to 84, however you want to do it.
He blows back out, and that was it. Well, they won the championship in 86.
They won a few. Yep. Yeah, oh, yeah. That's the last championship he won. But here's the other big part. He was almost 4 years older than Magic when they entered the league. So he hit his prime much earlier, won his MVPs earlier, all that stuff. But then from 85 to 90 or 86 to 90 might be Magic. It's pretty easily, you could have a conversation about Magic. You might be able to mention Isaiah. You might be able to mention Jordan, but it's not Larry Bird. But in those five-year blocks, you can be a lot more definitive. And it's like, hey, who was the most important band from 1980 to 1984? Bad Brains. Maybe it's Minor Threat. Maybe it's Black Flag. But we know we know it's not Youth of Today. But from 86 to 90, might be Youth of Today.
But they wouldn't have been in the overall 80s pick. But when you go to the whole
80s, it's a lot harder. So you're totally right. We do the decades because it's kind of fun. And
that's a lot of mix. Yeah,
exactly. But I totally agree. I think when we talk about the decades, you got to realize that some of it's a little bit arbitrary. The 90s is so interesting because of the adjacent stuff. I think so much of my favorite parts of the 90s are the adjacents. Quicksand, Into Another, some of the, you know, the Lifetime stuff, you know, where it's pushing away from the center of what.
Right, Threadbare, like in weird.
Honestly, the middle ground of hardcore in the 90s shifted very hard from where it was in the 80s, right? To the point where, like, by 1980s standards, and this is a conversation that I think makes sense, by 1980s standards, Earth Crisis is not a hardcore band.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.
But it's not fair to not call them a hardcore band, because the 90s, they are closer to center than something that might have been tried and true, quote-unquote, hardcore in the 80s. So it's a really fun conversation to have. I actually think I liked what you said, Patrick, the being able to pick from different shelves, the four shelves theory. And it's either a conversation for an episode or some sort of a game for an episode where we say, okay, on the 80s shelf, I'm pulling out 7 seconds New Wind. Give me a record from the other three shelves, the 90s, the 2000s, and the 2010s, that you would use to complement 7 seconds New Wind.
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
We'd have to do some pre, like this would be I think off the top of our heads, we're all going to like pee our pants. So,
Lifetime.
Yeah, right. Like Lifetime, Hello Bastards,
I'd go Silent Majority.
Oh, see? And then from the 2000s might be the hardest. I think the 2010s, I probably would do the Last Praise record, which I think is pretty good. But the 2000s, what would you do from the 2000s?
A melodic band from the 2000s.
Melodic singing. I mean, maybe.
Would you do a Kid Dynamite? Or, I mean, is that too much Damon?
That might be too fast to me. Maybe I go Polar Bear Club, but then you're starting to go far afield.
Yeah.
Maybe you go Crime and Stereo.
The early Crime and Stereo stuff. You could do
Stateside, you know?
Yeah, I'd pick something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so that would be a fun
I don't know
game.
If they would.
No.
They might not.
They might go GB. Maybe it's GB 80s.
Oh, right. Well,
Lifetime 90s.
And that's going to be so. All right, this is going to be a game, the four shelf game, where we're going to pick
guys' grocery games.
Oh yeah,
Bob's Band Bonanza.
How many game shows do you guys watch? I have friends who watch a lot of game shows, and I'm kind of left out in the cold. Okay,
no, I'd watch Jeopardy if it's on.
Mm. Yeah, there's a what have I watched? I'm terrible at TV, but I watched. There's a show called The Wall.
Okay.
It's terrible. It's exactly like what it's meant for, like, hey, it's 8:30. You just finished your fucking Hungry Man dinner, and now you're going to sit down and watch some TV. It's literally, it's like they get like two family members usually, and like you drop these, like, it's like Plinko. Remember Plinko from
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you're dropping rubber balls.
Okay.
And they land in these different monetary, across the board from like zero to a million. But then, like, one person's on the other end that they can't hear you, and you have to, like, bet if they're going to know the answer to these questions.
Okay.
It's pretty fucking terrible. It's this dude, Chris Hardwick, who was, like, canceled.
Oh, yeah.
Everything about this sounds – I hate – Tom, I'm, like, doing my best to be like, Tom
– Oh, no, dude, it's awful. Like, I was saying it, and, like, it's to the point that I was, like, at Thanksgiving, I go, hey, Mom, you ever watch, like, The Wall? She's like – gets all too hokey at the end. Like, my mom, who's like the nicest old Irish lady ever, was pretty much like, shut up, you jackasses, and just get to the end. Because they'll go like, you know, like, so Pat, me and you are in there, right? So you're behind, and I have to guess if you're going to know these. Then they give you the option. Do you sign the contract where you get a certain guaranteed amount of money? Or
too
you
many
go.
Elements.
Dude, there's so much. Or you go for what's like on the wall, right? So then they meet, they bring you out. We go face to face, and like it's literally 10 minutes of like, you know, Patrick, you're like, you know, you're amazing. You're one of the smartest people I've ever met. And I think, you know, no matter what happens here, you know, I'm always going to be proud of you. And I love, like, it's like, it goes on for like 10 minutes.
Oh, no.
And then the other person does the same thing back. And then they're like, I signed the contract. And it's like, you fuck, we had $1.5 million on the wall. Like, it's so annoying. I hate watching that.
Tom, I'm Googling Kevorkian Suicide Machine right now. I hate everything you're saying.
It's a terrible, terrible show. I recommend no one watch it. But Guy Fieri, I watched some guy's grocery games while I had cable at the family house.
Yeah. Ooh.
Okay. It's fun.
So that brings me to a point here, Tom, because I think it's true. Has the time of cable TV channel flicking, is it totally gone? I think it still exists
the TV is
in
terrible.
Suburbia. You know what I mean? It is really terrible. But like, you have enough reruns. You still have cable TV movies that are on. Like,
listen, I'm in hotels every night.
Oh yeah, so you do.
So I see a lot of, and my bandmates are not sports guys. Normally, a hotel is just ESPN is just on sports the entire center. Time because it's the only thing that you might get like an update during the. You know what I mean? Like, there's something.
Yeah.
Responsive
meanwhile,
about
you guys
it.
Are like, you get to the channel that has Friends on for 12 hours in a row, and you go, "This is it."
Listen,
this is how it ends.
Fucking Comedy Central plays 6-hour blocks of South Park, and
and MTV then The Office in alternating
rotations. Yeah. And MTV plays 6 hour blocks of ridiculousness.
I think six is being low. Yeah. I think they play like exclusively ridiculous.
Did you send the like TV listing of MTV or was
I did?
You did that. Oh my God.
I thought it was a meme, but it was real.
It's real. And Eric, who works in television, was pointing out, yeah, I mean, they probably did the math and they're just playing Moneyball with the fact that, hey, ridiculousness nets us the exact same amount of money as doing like anything else that we were doing. So
right, and they could probably get a month. They film for a month and they probably have a year's worth of stuff.
And but I mean, I got to say, like, nobody's talking about it because I don't think anybody's watching television, but television is in a really pathetic state, like super, it's dire. Like if I worked in that business, listen, I work in comics, which are a niche dying industry, and I am less concerned than somebody in television. I can't imagine anything scarier than like looking down the barrel of like being 25 and working for CNN. I'd be like, oh, there's no future here. You know, I'm fucked.
TV, but there are like those prestige, like the prestige shows that are still fucking killing it. It's like some of the best TV and movies going, you know, are these like HBO shows or Netflix shows or so there's still stuff like that, but like the average, like I'm gonna sit down, you know, and have, you know, a cup of very vanilla ice cream and watch TV like on a on a Wednesday night. It's
well,
fucking
that's the thing.
Dark.
There's a part of me that, you know, Patrick, you pointed out, Tom, you said it when you were at your mom's, with Patrick in the hotel room. Yo, cable TV, that was a weird, like, for our generations of people. Like, yo, you would just lull yourself. Like, I'm just going to flip channels and just chill.
Yes.
And I don't think young people have that now.
No. And, it's YouTube.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And is it more mindless than YouTube? Because YouTube feels like you have to be actively, you either let it roll, but you kind of had to have the initial impetus of.
You have to start somewhere.
You have to start somewhere. Whereas with TV, you start somewhere by turning it on and then going, oh, this is on. Okay.
Right. This is on commercial. I'm going to move.
Right. Ugh. Is it the same or is it a little different?
No, it's a little different. It's more active. Like the idea of just flipping channels mindlessly. Although some people just like turn on the autoplay and just let one shit play into another. But I think those people are like super high.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. That's crazy because that leads to a dark place real quick in any YouTube shit I've ever done. Okay, yo, this is going to be a pretty quick one, but I did want to bring to you guys, we talked about it briefly in the chat. The end of the year is coming up. We always do our end of year lists. So, a prod to say, hey, start thinking about this. Here's my question. Do you think More Good Hardcore has come out this year or More Good Hardcore came out last year in what is going to be a weird year to look back at historically for anything? Like, think about in 5 years when we can go, oh, we're going to do the year in hardcore 2020.
Yeah, that'll be great.
There were no shows.
Right,
Yeah.
But like, think about this. Say it's 2030. Some 20-year-old's getting into hardcore. We're dead by then. We're just dead. They're looking back and listening to like Nick's to Grink about, you know, hardcore, and they do a year in 2020. Will that context matter? So, initial question, and then feel free to go wherever you want. Did hardcore come out this year or last?
My gut with there's nothing to substantiate. Like, I'm not going to provide any evidence because I would need to actually sit and think. But my gut says this year far better than last year.
Me too. Because I feel like last year, if I had to guess, people held off on stuff because of the uncertainty. I think people in 2021, when stuff started popping, people were like, well, we could get a record out now. And like, while they might not have done that. And we know bands that have done that.
And I don't think we're telling tales out of school to say that like the Fiddlehead LP would have come out last year.
It came out a year after it could have.
One Step Closer's LP probably would have come out this year, but the initial goal was for it to come out middle of last year, you know? There's a lot of things that would have been different. I think you're right. I think you guys are right. 2021 has been better. But I'm also I'm also just kind of starting to work through figuring out what some of my favorite stuff was. There has been a lot of good stuff this year. Have you guys felt like that? Has there been a lot of good new stuff? Has there been any new material that's kind of caught your eye? What are you thinking?
So there hasn't been new material that necessarily like that I'm playing all the time, but I will say that I'm excited for every fucking announcement at the moment, which is like not no disrespect to the bands that were rolling stuff out last year, which I thought was like an admirable effort and for some bands really smart, but I wasn't like month to month excited about things that people told me were coming out or were announced. And now I'm like, at least my ears perk up at basically everything, which might just mean I'm in a good headspace and like a mark at the moment. But like for a guy who is complaining that nothing's connected with me lately, at least I'm fucking excited. You know what I mean? So, so I'm like, I'm kind of in the moment. Also, I got to say part of that is from now touring where you see that people are really into live music at the moment. So like even stuff that I'm not like, I doubt I'll be playing very much. I'm still like, oh, that'll be a fun show. Like no names, but like for a drug church tour, we were like a bunch of names got thrown at me for support. And some of them, like their records fucking suck. But I was like, that'll pop. That'll be cool. Like, because it's like, I know that people are excited to fucking do like an awkward head walk and break their ass to a lot of shit right now. And that's pretty encouraging to me. I'm waiting for the record of 2021. Won't happen, obviously, because we got a month. But I'm waiting for the record that like totally like clicks for me. Yeah, like I'm just like listening to it nonstop, and it hasn't happened yet this year. But like I'm feeling good about like this year as a whole.
Tom.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think, you know, like the Long Island melodic hardcore stuff has been great.
Still,
like
Koyo.
Stand Still, Koyo, all that sort of stuff has been great. The Pain of Truth record was good.
Oh, like,
super heavy. You know what I mean? Like bands that like were just kind of like playing their first shows, like, and you know, selling out their first show.
Yo, shout out to Long Island for kind of having this crazy, like, let's keep shit boiling over in terms of anticipation. And the moment that shit is open, they went to it with a fucking real. And so shout out to them. There's other scenes that are doing that same shit where it's like, hey, Cali. Everybody, we're going to make these big. You're going to come. You're going to have a good time. And we are going to reap the benefits of the fact that people are psyched. And like,
shout out, train, shout are you kidding me? Tsunami?
And then shout out some of the peripheral, like the venue in the valley, the midnight, is it the midnight hour?
Midnight hour?
Midnight hour, yeah.
Awesome to say, hey, look, we're coming out of this thing and we're going to have a venue. And it looks banging. I love that, the way that spot looks. Andy Spot, right?
What's it called? It's something in Italian. I was calling it Quattro Formaggio, but it's not.
Buca di Popo.
No, what is it? Seriously.
Do you know, PK?
No, I do not.
It's open. I mean, it's like a real play. I didn't make it up.
No. That I know.
It's a legit, like, hold on. I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, name escapes me.
The Buca di Beppo.
Shout out, you know,
Googling Buca di Beppo.
We said Stand Still. We said Koyo. Shout out to No Pressure. Definitely more on the pop punk tip, but like, yo, that band's banking
up
big rooms already. And like,
yeah, I remember being like, when like Harry and everybody was in, I'm like, who the fuck is this? Like, I wasn't like, not being disrespectful, I was like, I have no idea what this is.
No.
And then I was like, oh, they're like jamming, like they're packing out every place they play.
Yeah. Yo, I think Bob knew what was up, but Tom, you and I were both like, oh, yo, we're spent because we don't, this is popping and we had no idea.
Yeah, I'm like, that dusty that I have no idea what this is. It's Mono Occulta.
Okay, right.
Oh, yeah. Good point. Yes, thank you. Mono Occulta.
Not Buca di Beppo.
No,
not Buca di Beppo. Maybe you can get some, you know, or some Quattro Formaggio at the I'm trying to think what else. Cali's got a ton of stuff going on. That Knocked Loose, like, fucking interactive, like, made a cartoon and a fucking album.
Yeah.
Like, which is fucking insane.
Yeah, we got to do. Let's do a whole new music thing in, like, you know, not today, but next time we record. Shout out to the I think it's Roach Leg Records, who did some of the best like punk fast hardcore demos I've heard. Fatal War, People's Temple demos, like really good stuff. I think it's Fatal War, which is Madden from a bunch of Jersey bands.
Oh, all right.
Dan from Warm singing. Yeah. Is it Final War? Maybe it's Final War.
I quick hit you, Final fellas, War. Real quick?
Hit me, Pat.
Tom, have you seen the latest consumer product to use a indecision line?
No. Is there have there been past ones that I miss?
Well, you know that like everybody and their mother uses "For Those I Love, I Will Sacrifice."
Yeah, and I have no idea. It's like, dude, it was mint. I saw it on a fucking wall.
Yeah. So,
like, they get the tattoos and they don't fucking. You know.
So, I just sent you a link. This is Matt Pizzolo's comic, which is kind of long.
Come on, man.
So, here's the difference. Pizzolo is a Long Island hardcore kid.
This is legit then? This is
he knows the ref.
Yeah. You should be sending him a question and be like, hey, where's my comps?
Yeah. So this
it's called God Killer, which is apropos.
Yes, it is apropos.
For Those I Love, I Will Sacrifice. Yeah, there you go.
He is.
You know this guy?
I do. I know him well.
I want some books.
His books are gibberish. I can't read this shit, but
he can send me to me signed. I'm not going to fucking, I'll hang it somewhere.
Yeah, no, I'll get you those. He's a fun dude because he's a straight edge dude, but he is like, he writes basically drug books. Like this book, like
when I said, trippy, man.
Yeah. When I said I can't read this shit, I don't mean that disrespectfully. I mean, it's like, it's meant to be strange. It's meant to be like kind of transgressive. He's a dude. He likes to keep a very low profile. He's like one of our sponsors in that respect. But he's the guy who, like, in Long Island, he and some friends launched a basically DVD distro business when DVDs were like super profitable. So like,
wow.
You know, like the New York hardcore documentary sort of shit. Like he was getting all those into like Best Buy and you know what I mean? Like that sort of shit. And
oh, wow.
So he divested himself of that years ago, took the money and has since been, I mean, he represents a lot of my comic properties to film and television, but like he also makes comics himself, but he's like, I'm trying to think of who he's plugged in with. He's like definitely records adjacent sort of dude, you know?
No shit. That's cool. All right. I mean, I respect, like, as long as he didn't take it from like somewhere else. Like if he takes it from, I don't give a shit. Like,
no, he definitely stole this from you.
All right. Because there's a guy from Dublin. He's like he's a singer.
Mm. Ed Sheeran.
Yes, it's Ed Sheeran singing Galway Girl. No, but his band is hold on. Give me one second. Yeah, so it's a solo guy, David Balfe from Dublin.
Don't trust him.
His band is his musical project is called For Those I Love.
Okay.
So people that I know that know him, he's like, yeah, no, he has no idea.
Okay.
But he's a hardcore kid.
Oh, is that right?
Like, he loved like Ceremony and Trash. I'm like, nothing?
Yeah, listen.
I mean, is this like, unless it's an REM fucking, you know.
This one goes out to.
What you guys hear? I'm getting like an emergency.
Is that a train?
I think we're getting hit with a tsunami. Hold on one second.
Oh, no. Patrick,
this
no.
might be the last. This is my last.
All of a sudden, you're gonna hear. If you're not from Los Angeles, you're a bitch.
Yeah. what
I sounded like. I thought like Eric built like you know like model trains while you were gone.
Yo, yeah, he got really into modeling.
Oh, he should really do that.
Are you at the house?
I am. Yeah.
Let me ask you this: if we're doing sure. a couple quick hits, so we okay, can you know please. Stretch us out a little bit, so we're not just giving the folks. Some half-ass shit. What would you do for the Indigenous Peoples Holiday?
I attended a Friendsgiving where I talked to a very high dude about NFTs.
Now, did you the band like break up, do their own things? You all stick together?
No, we went to it was their Friendsgiving thing that I attended.
They invited the old weird guy to? Okay.
It was
wasn't
nice.
It Brian Murray? Like, well, we can name Brian Murray, right?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Is he unnameable now because you're mad at him because you fought with him that one time?
No, please. Yeah,
Patrick doesn't consider him a friend now, so he's like,
no, he was rubbing his balls.
This guy, Brian Murray. Night.
What are we talking about?
Good. That's our boy. We want to make sure you're good.
I won't. I'm going to give you a little insider information into the Los Angeles gay scene. He watched a very prominent Disney star get drilled in the ass the other day in a pool. A little fun. That was his Friendsgiving.
That's kind of cool.
His Friendsgiving was a lot more wild than my Friendsgiving, where I was on a couch listening to a dude talk about NFTs.
Just do a blind item?
I did.
Disney star who's not out?
Okay. I think he might be out though, but it's just him getting drilled like in the pool in front of 50 overweight dudes that makes it like a fun story.
So like, where does Citizen go? Where does like Ned and Glitter go? Like, what? Give me some. I always found it fascinating bands that were on tour and far from home during during a holiday where you can't have a show because no one's gonna come.
Yeah.
But like, what happens for those folks? Is it like every person for themselves, every band for themselves? Is it like
we invited everybody to the Drug Church Friendsgiving. The Citizen dudes were supposed to chill with their manager who was putting on like a Thanksgiving thing for them in Los Angeles. But I talked to them last night and they were, I'm not trying to scare anybody, they're going to be attending the show. Also, this will come out after the show takes place tonight. But they were somehow stranded in Patterson, California, which if you're
anything like Patterson, New Jersey, then
I was going to say, if you're not familiar with it, it's like, I'd rather be stranded in the ocean. So
why were they stranded?
I didn't get the details from them.
Man, this little leg of the tour has been we could talk about that.
Well, let's talk about that real quick.
Yeah.
I'm not telling tales out of school that Citizen, got their van and trailer stolen and recovered it. It is, firstly, to our listeners who are like, you know, like on that peace punk sort of shit where it's people over profit and the state only cares about property crimes, doesn't care about crimes against human beings. Just to clarify, the state doesn't care about property crimes either if you're not rich. They don't give a fucking shit. So like
– no, they come, they write some stuff down, and they leave, and you'll never see yourself.
Precisely right. So they I don't think I'm telling anything Citizen wouldn't want, but like – basically, a number of their they retrieved almost everything. What they couldn't get back was because the dude who had it, and they know he had it, was in his trailer, and police did not see him go from the van to his trailer, so they could not connect him, despite the fact that it was parked at his house. And to me, that supplies all the probable cause you would need. However, on the flip side, these are, in fact, the protections that you would want from police. So there's two ways to look at this. If I were a Citizen, I'd be very frustrated that I know a couple grand of my shit is sitting in a dude's lap in his trailer and police can't even look inside the trailer. I would be very frustrated. However, if I was somebody who did not commit a crime, I don't want the police sticking their head in my trailer for on a bullshit probable cause. So two ways to look at that. But suffice to say, the state doesn't care about your van and trailer. And
they're talking about, millions of dollars and stuff. They don't give a shit about you.
Yeah, they don't care. So it was Citizen did a smart thing by making their van trackable. And they went and bands do that. You can do that for very little money now.
Really, really smart.
It's really worth it.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.
I mean, Pat, do you want to tell them? I mean, I don't know if you want to cape up for Steve Jobs and the like, but like...
So,
you,
So they use...
For bands that are listening and are like, I wonder how we could do that. Here you can do it.
Everybody go to the Apple store or to a Target and buy yourself the Apple tags. Garmin sells a like a more heavy duty one, and that might be worth doing for sure. But get yourself something that enables you to track. Like, this is just for, I know that, so Tom, do you know that you and I have totally different listeners?
Yes.
Okay.
Well aware.
So for the listeners that share my concerns about living in a surveillance state, it's this isn't the best thing in the world, but you should take advantage of it so that your items are not lost forever. And that is, get yourself something with a tracking device, like whether that's an Apple tag, like AirTags or whatever they're called.
Oh, this is such an incredible...
You're walking around with a phone.
This is such an incredible crossroads for Patrick because of his disdain for surveillance state.
I hate that.
Versus
thing.
Your desire for... property rights. Yeah.
So, Pat, you are already tracked. You have a phone in your pocket.
I've heard all this nonsense. Listen,
it's different because you get this tile that you tape under the captain's chair in the fucking van, and all of a sudden it's like they're coming for you?
Then
all of a sudden you become Edward Snowden? Give me a break.
No. Forget the state watching you. I think it's getting weirder and weirder that we have the ability to watch each other in this like ring cameras are fascinating. They're also pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah, I wouldn't recommend those.
And also like, I love that Citizen app, that little snitch app that I can't get enough of. But at the end of the day, that's a snitch app. You know what I mean? Like it's not good. And
you're just waiting for the thing to pop up on your screen and be like, man is beating another man with a chicken or something. That's what I'm there for.
But like, meanwhile, you know, like,
and there are things like that. It's like alligator running down fucking, you know, outside the Chinese state, man's Chinese theater or whatever it's called now.
Oh, I mean, it's a wild.
What's it called now?
It's actually changed its name. It's the something else Chinese theater now.
Okay.
But anyway, all of this is to say that if you want to hang on to your shit, get yourself something that geolocates in that vehicle and take care of yourself, because everybody is getting ripped off out here. It's getting very rough. And I'm going to say this with no sort of political commentary whatsoever. I don't even know what to draw from this information, so I don't have political commentary to offer. It is fucking rough out here at this exact moment. The cities that I feel like my property is safe in is getting smaller and smaller. That list is shorter. So
are you safer in the big cities than those back country cities?
No, I mean, like Portland, a lot of people that came out to our show in Portland all had their vehicles ripped up. And I don't think of Portland as being like a place I've got to be on guard myself, but like the property stuff is really wild right now. Like the car breakage, like in San Francisco, I felt pretty good until I talked to people from San Francisco that were like, oh yeah, stick your head out every few minutes. Like,
wow.
It's, there's not like a ton of places that I feel good at the moment. So, I don't know, just a thing to consider. If you're a touring band,
I mean, what's shocking to me for the Citizen story?
Yes.
Like in my head, like when you go like, oh, their van got stolen. Like this had happened to One King Down outside of CB's in the 90s. Happened to like Trip Face and all stuff. Like by the time, like, you know, so you're running around the Lower East Side trying to find the van. By the time you find it.
Oh, yeah. It's
stripped.
Yeah.
But the fact that like this person took it from point A and just moved it to point B, not that far away, and then was going to figure – like I figured like they were, you know, their amps were being hocked already.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Again, sorry to Citizen if I'm telling tales out of school. I don't think I'm saying anything that –
and this is all general stuff that I've seen on the internet, so I'm not saying anything that
– So in this case – and this is what I'd like to make our listeners aware of. I've said on the podcast before, I've kind of implicated venues and then walked it back because clearly I don't know, you know, like it's irresponsible to say. It's probably not venues, to be honest. In much more likely, it is, for example, I won't say that this is Citizen. You look out your window. Van's there. Great. You get your clothes on. You go outside. Van's missing. You go to the hotel security. Hey, our van was just stolen. We're going to need the cameras for when the cops show up. Oh, the cameras are out on that side of the building.
Oh.
Could somebody reasonably not implicate the overnight guy at that point? You would have to say, oh, is that right?
He's a suspect.
Like, so here's the thing. The person that stole their vehicle, the people that stole their vehicle, drove it 30 minutes to their home. So my question would be, was this gang of van thieves, were they just driving around random Marriotts 30 miles away from their home? Or is it much more likely that somebody made a phone call to them and said, hey, the cameras that are out whenever you come by are out today? I'm not saying this is the case because I don't need the Marriott of Baymont of, whatever, right, coming up my ass. But I'm saying that in my view, this shit is almost always an inside job and you are getting no protections. I'm pushing hard for us to only stay at casinos. Mm. And that's because casinos are the only places that we've stayed on this tour that have their own security plus infinite surveillance. So like it is like when we parked at some sketchball shitty ass casino, I felt the safest that I felt with our shit on this entire tour. So that's just food for thought for anybody out there.
Really?
Yeah. The idea that you just have like, I don't know what it was. They had their own security and then it was on a reservation. So it was the reservation police did the drive around every hour. Right. So like that shit is all valuable when, as a deterrent, like we also, so Drug Church, I don't want to give potential thieves all our fucking modus operandi, but we just bought boots for our vehicle. We're putting boots on every night. And like
a parking, you didn't pay your parking tickets boots?
Yeah. And here's the thing. You can take a boot off. It takes half an hour. You could take a boot off, but I want you to earn whatever you're going to take from us. You know what I mean? Like you better, okay. You're putting in half an hour worth of work. You're going to sit there. And you're going to take this boot off.
A tracker, so you better be quick.
Yeah, exactly right.
Because,
so,
Tom, I liked what you said, too, in the 90s, bands would get their van stolen and it was stripped. I think we're looking at different people who are grabbing these vans right now. I think these people, it speaks to kind of where things are at. I think it's, are there more organized people grabbing vans? Sure, I'm sure in some places. But I think in other places, it's just people who are on a new thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the catalytic converter craze of the moment where it's just... Yeah,
people are fucking hurting, man.
Yeah, desperate people.
You know, so, it sucks.
But here's the thing, like, not to dare a bad situation, but desperate or not, you're not getting my shit. Like, you're gonna have to earn it. So,
do you sleep in the van, or now that you stay in hotels, you stay inside?
I sleep in the van any night that it's above, like, 40 degrees.
By choice, like, not to protect your shit necessarily, but...
Nah, I'm just the guy that's like totally like I can fall asleep there with no problem. So like I just elect to do that, you know, because some people if a bad night's sleep to them is like it just ruins them. But like if I'm asleep, I'm asleep. There's no like sleeping on the floor and sleeping on a bed are the same to me because I'm asleep. So like,
right. That's which is good to know. So when they try to steal your van and you're asleep and you're just going for a joyride.
Yeah. So,
like you're not going to be a deterrent. They're just going to be like, oh shit, that guy still, I just hey, had a bump.
Where are we going?
No, there's that, like
breakfast potatoes.
I've told the story on this podcast, break into the van, steal something from my bag inches away from my head and did not wake up.
So
clearly I am not
audacious.
Yeah. Yeah. Way audacious. I think about that and think, wow,
deserve it more than I do, buddy.
He could have given me a wet willy. So
Wisdom and Chains has a song about that. Them waking up or one of the members waking up in the van as it's being driven away by a thief.
Yes. I believe pardon me, Wisdom.
It happened in Ohio. I want to say,
yeah, I'm not in their circle, so but I heard this story the other day and it was Crutch. That actually experienced.
Oh, okay. Same dude. Some of the same dudes, right?
Same dudes, yeah. So like I think
picked
that
the wrong band if you're doing that one.
Yeah, I think they experienced it in Crutch, sang about it in Wisdom in Chains, and it's like a lore sort of scenario where it's a great, if it's as true as I hope it is, it's a great story.
I'm betting it. I'm pretty sure it is. Like, I would imagine.
Well, like, yeah. That's a fact. Dudes that don't need to lie. That's a fact.
Yeah, like, they don't have to play it up. I mean, it's probably, yeah. It's a great song, but it's funny about, like, imagine of all the fucking vans in all the world, you pick these. Like, cool.
Yeah, good luck.
I got knocked unconscious trying to steal somebody's fucking Flying V or something. You know what I mean? Like, great. I think it's such a scary thing, and it used to be only certain places, or, like, you know, it's all over. And, like, especially if you're on tour, and I know, like, the property fucking rights, and you don't have to press charges, but you can get your stuff back. And yeah, I mean, especially for being on tour, it's not like someone stealing your car is one thing, and that really sucks. But, like, if it's, you know, $20,000 worth of stuff, that's not portable.
Yeah.
That's to me, like, we used to say this, like, you know, I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast or if you and I, like, we just talked about it off the air, but, like, there were certain places that we, like, rolled up and it was like, well, this is the only hotel within 30 miles and we're all exhausted. Like, we'd, like, do, like, a quick scan and be like, all right, so we're carrying everything but the amps inside.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Every guitar, the guitar heads, the bass head, everything.
Yeah, and it's 1:30 in the morning, and this is annoying, but it'll be less annoying than having all of our shit stolen. Yes.
Right. But, I mean, I can't, like, these, you know, God, you know, Citizen never got their shit back. Like, so that's a headlining tour that they've lost all of their stuff.
Yes.
And bands of that ilk are not playing garbage.
No, they're playing good equipment.
They didn't, like, and hard to get equipment. They're not playing, like, crate amps and fucking, you know, Marshalls off the fucking shelf.
No. So,
like, they got real shit.
And that's the thing is, like, they also do, like, you know, they, like, the singer has an in-ear because their setup is such that they're, like, it's like, it would be a major hassle and would impact the next few shows, even if they borrowed nice gear, because you're playing on new shit. It's like, they are, like, these are only 500 cap rooms, which to some people isn't shit, but I'll tell you what, like, they really put on, like, a fucking, they're good at this and they do a big show. So, like, it's like, I think that we have this habit of, if somebody's not filling an amphitheater, we just seem to say, like, oh, that's rock club shit. And, like, you know, they, like, it'll be fine. But it's like, no, there's people that take this shit seriously, you know, and they are one of those bands. So, like, I don't have any gear. So frankly, I couldn't give a shit, but I don't like the idea of the presumption that you're going to steal from me, like, while I'm asleep. Like, to me, it's like a weird, like, respect thing where I'm like, oh, no, you're not getting any of this stuff.
Like, what do you think? I'm a sucker? Like,
Yeah. I'm like somebody's, I'm like,
what, like, am I a fucking hump to you, bro? Like, you're going to do this in front of me?
Exactly. I'm like somebody's Goomba dad, like, helping their son buy their first car. Like, oh, you think I'm a sucker? Okay. Yeah. Well, you know,
you turn into, like, the Jersey Shore and, like, Ronnie stole your girlfriend right in front of you. What am I, some kind of asshole? Yeah.
Exactly right. So, yeah, everybody be careful out there. I know we've talked about it on this podcast before, but then it, like, weirdly manifested on this tour, and I got to see it up close. So, an interesting thing. Bob's right. Everybody do yourself the favor and get those tracking devices of whatever kind. The Apple ones
are, I think they're, like, 4 for $100 or something.
Yeah, it's good.
And hide them somewhere in your van that they can't find and throw them away. Right. I've seen enough Dan Brown books become movies where they go, I have a tracker in my coat. I'm going to throw it out and throw, like, the...
Yeah, I'm gonna tape,
like, Interpol it off the, you know, off the scent.
Yeah, I'm gonna tape it to a sewer rat.
So you have to kind of maybe keep it somewhere that's not obvious that there's some tracking going on.
Yeah,
shout out to the sewer rats.